content of this program is intended for a blind and print impaired audience. Hello, this is Shadate Hargett Hill from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading to you from Triangle Business Journal and online stories. The first story, Biz Women, Triangle Tech Stars. Women are taking the lead in C-suites and in Research Triangle Park. For years, men have worked in the windowed offices of Research Triangle Park. With a handful of exceptions, it's been the men making the executive decisions at their respective campuses, from NetApp to EMC to IBM. Decisions that impact thousands of technology employees within RTP's borders. But the tide appears to be changing. For the first time ever, RTP's internet storage giants, EMC and NetApp, are helmed locally by women. For the first time since Rusan Mitchell Sinclair's tenure ended in 2007, a woman sits at the top spot of IBM's RTP campus. Six of RTP's top 25 employers have women leading their campuses. While the odds locally are better than the S&P 500, where just 4% have women in the CEO seat, any gap is still a point of criticism for the local technology sector, which continues to struggle to fill the jobs of today, much less the projected STEM or STEM, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics gain. A recent study out of the International Monetary Fund confirmed that having women in executive leadership roles leads to a higher project profit margin. The survey, which looked at 2 million firms in 34 European countries, found that just by having one woman in the C-suite or on a company's board means an 8 to 13 point higher return on assets. But even with those numbers making the case for C-suite hires, it still has discrimination for that. But even with those numbers making the case for C-suite hires, it's discrimination, not a lack of qualifications, standing in women's way, according to new research out of Harvard Business School. Researchers collected information on top executives at Swedish companies over a six-year period, looking solely at data on executive roles. They found that while women represented 21% of senior executive roles, they made up just 8% of CEOs in a paper on data. Equal opportunity, gender gaps in CEO appointments, and executives' pay. Researchers couldn't find a logical reason for the discrepancy. Our results are consistent with the view that male and female executives sharing equal attributes neither have equal opportunities to reach the top, nor are they equally paid. The abstract reads, while data show the Triangle is ahead of companies worldwide when it comes to having women at the reins, any gap is bad news for the sector, executives say. Christy Schaefer, venture capitalist at Hatteras Venture Partners, this year's Women in Business Lifetime Achievement Award winner and former CEO of Inspire Pharmaceuticals, says it starts out a lot earlier than in the job interview, with girls lacking executive role models. Without that foresight, they not only don't hone their curiosity in science, but they also don't have the confidence required to aggressively push through the C-suite doors. They need to know what's possible, she says. Other executives agree. Carol Flack, cite lead farmer's wife, that's what she thinks as far as what she says for the EMC at RTP. That's what she knew and what she was pushed toward until a female science teacher encouraged her and put her in a position where she saw female engineers in action. That's what changed things, she said. Without that teacher, she says she wouldn't have pursued engineering and never would have found herself in a leadership role. But Mary Dale Chilton, the senior scientist whose work in biotechnology has given her global recognition and multiple prizes, including the World Food Prize, dubbed the Nobel of her field, says mentors aren't the only reason women are starting to move up in leadership roles in RTP. Maybe they're starting to hire the best person for the job, she speculates. Chilton didn't have a female leader push her to succeed, nor did she have prevalent examples of women scientists in her mind when making telescopes in her backyard as a child. What she did have was a book her brother gave her on astronomy, and that's all it took to ignite a passion for science. Schaefer says that while she encourages women to volunteer for STEM-related causes, sometimes all it takes is encouragement, she says, pointing to work she's both witnessed and participated in at North Carolina School of Science and Mathematics. But even women aspired to join the STEM field don't necessarily find leadership roles appealing, says Denise Cox, local site lead at NetApp. They may see their careers in terms of sacrifice, feeling pressure to choose between work projects and family time. It's a choice often completely unnecessary, as the technology exists to work from anywhere. I have been very fortunate that I could be flexible, she says. If her child has a doctor's appointment, she can leave the office. Her work, after all, is just a few taps of a smartphone away. Diane Adams, chief people officer for Click, says that's the advantage of technology, the ability to be flexible and still get the job done. But she says real encouragement is a boss that looks past your productivity and looks at you as a person. While at various leadership roles, including Cisco, she recalls supportive supervisors that even let her take her children to meet across the globe. It's that kind of environment you want to be loyal to, Adams says. It's that kind of environment that can help you grow. And that's what women are looking for, Schaefer says. They, like men, are looking for leadership roles where they can really make a difference. They just need someone to tell them they can do it, she says. Senator upset with Facebook over WhatsApp encryption and other things to know from Washington today. Facebook put smiles on the faces of a lot of privacy and advocacies by making its WhatsApp messaging app impossible to crack. But Senator Tom Cotton hit the angry button. This is an open invitation to terrorists, drug dealers, and sexual predators to use WhatsApp's services to endanger the American people. The Arkansas Republican said, "We cannot allow companies to purposefully design applications that make it impossible to comply with court orders. We should have the same rules and expectations for tech and data companies that we do for telecom companies and banks. That the presumption of privacy contains narrow exemptions for court order searches related to law enforcement and national security." WhatsApp was praised, however, by Senator Ron Wyden, a Democrat of Oregon. This is a significant step to strengthening online security for millions of people. Consumers are demanding the best possible security for their digital communications, and WhatsApp is just the latest company moving to meet that demand. If American companies don't provide these services, there are already hundreds of foreign encryption products available online. The Occupational Safety and Health Administration, also known as OSHA, cited Osasco-based Nakanisha Manufacturing Corp. for 20 safety violations at a winter Georgia automotive parts plant after a worker suffered third-degree burns when a dust collector exploded. The company faces nearly $145,000 in fines. There had been four previous fires in the plant's dust collection system, OSHA noted. Management knew that the combustible dust hazard was not corrected, yet they continue to let workers operate the system, said William Fulcher, director of OSHA's Atlanta East Area office. The Environmental Protection Agency has added a former Keystone Company pesticide manufacturing plant in Vineland, New Jersey, to its Superfund list of hazardous waste sites. Groundwater and soil at the site are contaminated with arsenic and lead, as are the yards of nearby homes. The Superfund designation makes the site eligible for cleanup funding. The EPA also added four other sites to its national priorities list: a former zinc smelter in Fairmont, Illinois, a former dry cleaner in Atlantic, Iowa, a former gas plant in Norfolk, Nebraska, and a contaminated groundwater plume in Roswell, New Mexico. I think Roswell's alien visitors should be required to pay for this cleanup, according to sources. Now you can go to 7-Eleven and have the Internal Revenue Service take a big gulp out of that bank account because of what is going on with the different organizations. New restaurants, retail openings on Raleigh's Hillsborough Street. The new Pyology Pizzeria restaurant planted at the Stanhope Student Apartment Building on Hillsborough Street in Raleigh has set an opening date for its first location in North Carolina. Pyology will be opening on April 23rd, according to a news release from the company, joining several other retailers that have opened or will be opening soon at Stanhope. Stanhope is located at 3001 Hillsborough Street near the main campus of NC State University in Raleigh. Pyology will be offering free pizza on opening day between 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. and from 6 to 8 p.m. with 100% of all donations raised going to Junior Achievement of Eastern North Carolina. It joins the 24-hour CVS drugstore that has already opened on the ground level floor of Stanhope, a development project of Kame Realty Corp. of Raleigh. Also coming to Stanhope in late April or May will be a relocated IHOP breakfast restaurant, which is moving from its legacy location at 1313 Hillsborough Street, and a Smoothie King franchise. 8th Street Kitchen, which will be opening in the old Varsity Theater building at 2420 Hillsborough Street, is also under construction and expected to open late spring. What Manny Pacquiao and Glenn Beck have in common, this soon-to-be Raleigh-based upstart. Boxing celebrity Manny Pacquiao is teaming up with a tech firm that has a big Raleigh connection, Privy Global Services. Through a new partnership, Pacquiao is launching an international fan club, one that entitles its members to mobile content, the benefits going to the boxer's charitable foundation. Through mobile technology being marketed in Raleigh, Pacquiao will, in a sense, have his own international channel, allowing fans to go behind the scenes to see fighter training and access exclusive interviews. Pacquiao will be able to interact directly with fans, no middleman required. And according to the Orlando-based CEO of the company, Matish Mattel, he's just one of the celebrities connected to the company. Other celebrities counted among previous clientele include conservative talk show host Glenn Beck, television personality and blogger Tila Tequila, and motivational speaker Les Brown. In addition to being able to interact with fans, the technology also gives them an access to a database of fans, allowing them to sell tickets and merchandise as well as poll their followers for their opinions. Patel, who says he's in the process of moving the headquarters to Raleigh, where a team of 10, primarily in sales and marketing, already operate at a site on Fayetteville Street, says reaching Pacquiao took a combination of work and luck. His firm had a live stream of rapper Kendrick Lamar receiving a key to the city of Compton, and one of the people watching just happened to be connected to a boxing organization. One link leads to another, he says, adding that the company now has about 6 other boxers ready to go live through the technology platform. Patel didn't set out to be an entrepreneur, he says. He actually set out to be a troublemaker. The fact that he was good in school gave him a lot of spare time as a child to use to beat up bullies and get in trouble. In his home country of India, his life turned around at age 16. However, when he transferred to technical school and fell in love with technology, when he came to the United States years later with $100 in his pocket, according to his bio, he put himself through school and ended up serving a variety of technical roles in everything from consulting companies to pharma. I just got bored, he says. I needed that hunt. I needed that challenge. So in 2006, he started working with mobile texting technology, figuring out how to deliver videos, audio, and pictures in new ways through his phone. By 2007, he had a company that would be later called WeText. That company is similar to Privy, but targets small businesses and not celebrities. With Prevy, fans pay to access exclusive celebrity content, and Prevy takes a cut, Patel says. Prevy has about 30 employees and has 5 job openings, according to Patel. This came from staff writer Lauren K. Osinger. Raleigh lags other cities in women-owned business growth. In the past decade, women-owned business in Charlotte have grown sales at a much steeper clip than in Raleigh. In Charlotte, sales to women-owned businesses have more than doubled to an estimated $13.3 billion this year, according to the 6th Annual State of Women-Owned Business Report, commissioned by American Express Open. In Raleigh, sales to women-owned businesses have grown 42% to an estimated $6.3 billion this year. Women-owned businesses in Charlotte also grew in number and employment at a faster clip than in Raleigh. In addition, Durham ranked ahead of Raleigh as a city for women in the workplace, according to a new report from personal financial website NerdWallet. However, Raleigh's women-owned business grew at a pace faster than state and national averages. Generally, urban areas tend to perform better than rural areas, which will bring the larger averages down. As a state, North Carolina performed worse than the nation by a measure of women-owned businesses in the past decade. Both by total employment and sales, women-owned businesses grew at a faster clip across the nation than in North Carolina, according to the American Express Open. Nationally, the number of women-owned firms increased by 45% in the past decade compared to 9% increase among all businesses. Comparison of women-owned businesses. This is a table comparing North Carolina women-owned firms data to the national numbers. Now, the growth of women-owned firms from 2002 to 2016 adds up to this. Total U.S. number of firms in 2002, 6,489,483. The employment, 7,146,229. In 2007, it went to 7,793,139, to the employment being 7,579,876. In 2012, the number of firms were 9,878,397. The employment was 8,431,614. In 2016, the estimate for the number of firms were 11,313,900, and the employment was 8,976,000. Now, the change for 2007 to 2016, as the number of firms was 45.2%, the employment was 18.4%. And in the sales for 2002, it had 940,774,986. For 2007, it was 1,202,115,750. In 2012, it was 1,419,834,295. And in 2006, it was 1,622,763,800. And that change was 35%. Now, for North Carolina, the number of firms were, in 2002, 173,874. The employment was 224,738, and the sales was about 26 million. For 2007, it was 225,512. The employment was at 253,009, and the sales was at about 33 million dollars. For 2012, we have about 288,000 for the firms. Employment was at about 268,000, and the sales was about at $37 million. 2006, it went for firms of 329,000, the employment being 284,000, and the sales being $40,422.04. Now, that percentage has changed. For that firm, it went from 45.8%, employment 12.1%, and the sales went from 26.2% from 2007 to 2016. Here in Raleigh, the number of firms went from 2,996 in 2002 for the employment of a little bit more than 31,000. The sales was at $3 million. 2007, the firms were at 29,000. The employment was at about 35,000. The sales was at 4,400,000. 2002, the number of firms went from about 39,000. Employment went to about 41,000. And the sales was about $6 million. 2006, it went for the firms of about 44,000. Employment was about 44,000, and the sales was about 7 million, which made the change in 2007 to 2006 for the number of firms at 50.5%, the employment at 24%, and the sales at 41.9%. Raleigh Credit Union acquires Rocky Mount Institution. Two credit unions with triangle footprints are merging, creating an institution that, once integrated, would have assets of $2.65 billion. The $2.6 billion Raleigh-based Coastal Federal Credit Union is acquiring the $53.3 million Rocky Mount-based Freedom Credit Union. Once the deal closes, the headquarters of the surviving financial institution, Coastal, will remain in Raleigh. Combined, the new and bigger credit union will have nearly 220,000 members, as Coastal has more than 212,000 and Freedom has more than 9,300. As part of the merger, Coastal, via prepared statement, said it would, quote, be committed, end quote, to shifting all Freedom employees into comparable roles within Coastal. Additionally, Coastal plans to keep all four of Freedom's branch locations in Cary, Henderson, Rocky Mount, and Raleigh. Coastal currently has 21 branches, 17 in the Triangle market. The two credit unions will continue to operate separately until a system conversion scheduled for November is ready. Boards of both institutions have already approved the merger, which is expected to become officially known July 1st, pending final approval from regulators and members. Jeff Jones, Freedom's president and CEO, called the opportunity too attractive to pass up in a prepared statement. Coastal offers the size, strength, and resources of an industry leader with the comparative values and local focus of a small credit union, he said. Chuck Purvis, president and CEO of Coastal, said in his prepared statement that more than 6,000 Coastal members currently living in the Henderson and Rocky Mount areas will benefit from this natural expansion of our geographic reach. Freedom Credit Union was established more than 60 years ago as the Rocky Mount ACL Federal Credit Union. Coastal was chartered in 1967, according to a recent report by bank comparison site Deposit Accounts. Coastal is the second largest credit union in the state and the 65th largest in the nation, with an A health rating and a Texas ratio of 5.98%. Sold, one of Raleigh's largest privately owned student housing complex. The Priest Company of Raleigh has been on a bit of an acquisition spree lately, and this week the company added another prominent Raleigh student housing complex to its portfolio, Campus Edge, near NC State's University Centennial Campus. Terms of the deal were not disclosed, and as of late Wednesday afternoon, the property deed record had not been recorded in Wake County, but the property tax value of the complex is estimated at more than $30 million. The 250-unit Campus Edge community was built in 2000 and features 546 student bedrooms, making it one of the largest privately owned student housing apartment communities in Raleigh. It is located at 3551 Cum Laude Court near Gorman Street and I-440. The Campus Edge deal is the Priest Company's fifth major real estate acquisition so far in 2016. It acquired in the first quarter three properties in Boca Raton, Florida. near campuses of other Florida Atlantic University, Palm Beach State College, and Lanier University, as well as the 324-bed Collegiate Commons apartment community in Greensboro near North Carolina A&T State University. Terms of those deals were also not disclosed. The Prias company purchased Campus Edge from an Atlanta-based joint venture partnership. It is the company's 14th multifamily property in the Triangle market. Raleigh is our headquarters city, and we have unparalleled expertise here, stated Prias President and CEO Donna Prias in a news release about the deal. Our national footprint exposes us to new practices and opportunities. However, North Carolina remains an important market. We see continued opportunity throughout North Carolina and have excellent relationships with the leading colleges and universities. Prias says the company plans to reinvest another $2.2 million in renovations to the property ahead of the 2017-18 school year. The renovations will include a full makeover of the clubhouse and upgrades to many of the units, including new flooring, countertops, upgraded black appliances, and lighting. This is an editor's note from Amanda Hole. The original headline for this story identified the complex as the largest privately owned student housing community in Raleigh. The story, however, says it is one of the largest in Raleigh. The headline has been updated for accuracy. Now we move on to 7 tips for managing your time effectively. I did a fundraiser with Bill Clinton when I was president of the National Basketball Retired Players Association, or the NBRPA. This association is for washed-up NBA players like me, looking forward to the next phase of life. The former president was as smooth and graceful as ever, and he made a statement that I will never forget. He said that intelligence is evenly distributed throughout the earth without discretion. The only thing that separates us all is opportunity. Wow. We in America just have a better opportunity based on where we were born and the environment we were blessed with in the place of what we do. Double wow. You know what? He's right. I never thought of it that way. So this is how my mind works. I scoured my brain and wanted to think of another resource that is evenly distributed around the world without discrimination. Time, just like opportunity, is evenly distributed. Every one of us gets 24 hours a day to operate. We all get the same exact time every day. From a homeless person holding his sign at the exit ramp with his pregnant girlfriend and a dog to the richest man on earth, we all get the same 24. So the question is, what are you doing with your business opportunity and your 24? Simply put, 24 hours is a long time to get things done. Even if you sleep 8 hours, you still have 16 hours left. If managed properly, there is nothing you can't accomplish in this world. We should never waste an opportunity, and we should never waste time, because in all actuality, it's all we have to work with. Here are a few keys to make sure you manage your time wisely so you don't waste your wonderful opportunities. Number one, invest your time like you would money, only in activities that will give you a good return on your investment. Number two, right time, right activity. Make sure a 15-minute task only takes 15 minutes. Number three, always use a to-do list. It will save you 2 hours a day in productivity. Number four, always prioritize your activities. All work is not created equal. High-value tasks should trump menial tasks. Get a good night's sleep is number five. Be fresh. Being fresh is the best way to be productive and not just busy. Number six, beware of time thieves like unfocused people. Number seven, social media that is not business related brand building is a time thief. If you can manage your time wisely, it is the only way you can maximize your wonderful opportunity you have right now. Time does not discriminate. We all get 24 hours a day to make our dreams come true. What are you going to do with yours? That comes from Walter Bond, continuing writer. how one chicken restaurant is disrupting fast casual. I don't write food or restaurant reviews, but I admire any organization that changes the game and distinguishes itself in a crowd field. One such organization is the Fast Casual Restaurant Hot Chicken Takeover, or HCT, in Columbus, Ohio. Joe and Lisa DeLoss started the restaurant after taking a trip to Nashville in 2013, where they were introduced to spicy hot chicken, a regional specialty that consists of fried chicken plastered with hot pepper paste. They were so taken with the phenomenon that Joe and Lisa brought it back to Columbus and made it the centerpiece of their new business. While only open Wednesday through Sunday from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m., they are killing it by consistently attracting long lines of eager customers. The chicken is very good, but that's only part of the story. More significant, HCT is committed to providing employment support for people who seek to re-enter the workforce from the correction system, people with a poor work history, or simply those with a general inability to obtain employment. As Joe described it, we provide a work environment that is really focused around accountability and support. It allows our employees to empower one another. HCT intentionally provides a work environment where people can grow. One of our primary qualities they look for in prospective employees is humility, because it takes humility to receive feedback and grow. They have created a culture of accountability and engagement that has lowered employee turnover to 50% compared to the rest of the industry that is over 100%. Having met some of the people who work at HCT, I can tell you they are very loyal and excellent ambassadors for the business. And happy employees make happy customers. Seeing and interacting with these employees, people who are growing and thriving despite their difficult history and circumstances, is a feel-good experience that makes people smile. But there's more. If you were to go there, the first thing you would notice is how utterly unremarkable the space is, at least in a conventional way. The dining area is a large, plain, rectangular room with long, connected tables and plastic covers that reminded me of summer camp or church picnics more than a fast, casual restaurant. It's very basic and communal, and that's part of the appeal. Joe and Lisa understand that people are hungry for more than just good food. People want authentic experiences and relationships. HCT's simple dining facility establishes the authenticity of its mission and facilitates interaction among strangers. The long tables force communal dining and break down social barriers. It's a very important concept. The experience for our guests is about our customer service, our atmosphere, and the people they meet in line, said Joe. The chicken is important, but it's the experience too. In business speak, HCT is disrupting the fast casual restaurant market by competing on social impact, highly engaged management, and a strong culture of accountability, and a unique experience of communal dining that breaks down social barriers. It's bringing summer camp and church picnics to market. This is from contributing writer Urko Wood. Three ways to influencing people during your presentation. A nervous entrepreneur standing in the wings has an idea, and it's not just that they're just looking at it as a quick path to personal wealth. It also seems a part of their DNA to create something from nothing. But they have a problem, not enough cash to make their dream a reality. They need to get more of the stuff from probably the most intimidating audience they'll ever encounter, venture capitalists. It's a group whose motivation is rarely altruistic, but has everything to do with making lots of money and deal with leverage that feels like your children, dog, and golf clubs may be included. What I'm describing here is one of the most highly rated TV shows going, Shark Tank. So let's see if we have our arms around this high-pressure presentation scenario. The stakes are high. Entrepreneurs only have moments to make their case, not hours. The message has to be crystal clear and uniquely solve a problem. There are no do-overs. They have one shot. Their audiences are intensely presentation weary. If this scenario sounds familiar, it's probably because you find yourself in these situations way too often. So how can you best leverage Shark Tank scenarios in real life? Three simple ideas for you. Number one, if you aren't connected with real issues in seconds, then you lose. I remember a venture capitalist once told me his greatest frustration occurs when hopeful entrepreneurs deliver high practice 30-minute pitches that only cause him to ask, "Tell me again what you do?" Whenever you're trying to persuade or influence others, it almost always includes being able to clearly articulate the mutually agreed upon pain, effect, and need involved in a catalyst for change. Sometimes this can be a simple story. Number two, if you aren't passionate about your idea, don't expect others to be. If you think many other inventors coming to Shark Tank were cheerleaders in high school, you'd be wrong. They practice at least the perception of passion, which took some effort. People rarely engage with those who don't appear to be at least a little enthusiastic about their own idea. Number three, the perception of confidence can be learned. Confidence is infectious. Unfortunately, there are many people we encounter every day who look painfully uncomfortable in front of a room, and it's just plain hard to listen to what they're saying. The good news is there are very specific skills you can learn that convey confidence until you build it out of your successful experiences. This most often starts with keeping your eyes up off the floor and purposefully engaging in conversation with those in front of you. There's a reason Shark Tank is one of the most popular shows on TV. We admire those who have the courage to take a chance in the tank. We're fascinated by their ideas and how simply they explain them. And when they succeed and get some money for their ideas, we share just a little bit in their success. Maybe it's time you stop just trying to survive in your personal Shark Tank and commit to the kind of skill building and professional development that will you thrive to do. This comes from Jim Edencott, contributing writer. Continuing with the themes of steps, five strategies for awesome social media customer service. In my last column, we explored the importance of creating a solid social media customer support presence for your company. In this column, we're going to drill down a little deeper as we explore five best practice strategies that do the best job possible in meeting the needs of customers, both prospects and existing clients, through social media channels. Number one, be where your customers are. While your business may have a solid social media presence already, sometimes the most important conversations are taking place outside those walls. Be diligent about responding to social media posts about your company, how we're all losing the war against advertising, and this is some of the things that are happening. Today's consumers are in charge of conversations, who they share them with and where. To be a part of the conversation, brands need to know where their customers are and what they're talking about. That means being available to help them through your official branded social media channels as well as through non-branded channels. It means that you need to be proactive and search the web for keywords, mentions, hashtags, brand names, hashtags you really don't want to find, like hashtag McDonald's is you know what, hashtag Comcast sucks, and hashtag FU American Airlines, good and bad product reviews, and random blogs and comments. It also means looking for a relevant way to connect with consumers, especially those who are decidedly dissatisfied. It's not particularly easy to jump into a conversation someone is having on a blog or through our product review, but there are plenty of social media channel opportunities to get in front of people currently maligning a brand so that a meaningful conversation can be started. Number two, be authentic. We are all people. We all have good days, and from time to time, some of us have days that we would rather not relive. While being disappointed by a purchase we made or how we were treated at a store or even online may not be the end of the world, for many of us, it is a personal annoyance that can lead to anger and resentment. This means that brands need to be careful about how they approach people who are already showing signs of discontentment. By taking a personal and person-to-person view of this situation, a customer service representative can start to relate personally to the issue in the context of how the consumer is feeling. In many cases, a little empathy can go a long way. Replying to a virtual feel tweet by saying something like, "I'm so sorry to hear about your car accident, medical emergency, problematic reservation, etc. It must be very troubling. The good news is that I can help you." That is a great way to start. It's the incredibly important way to communicate with consumers in this way that feels authentic and fully transparent. In most cases, social media conversations are open for all to see. So it's not about being anonymous, and it's not about worrying about public relations, although there should be guidelines as to what is shared over these open channels. But at its core, it should be about relationship building. If this means apologizing, then apologize. If it means listening hard to identify what the problem is, then you listen hard. The people taking on these roles should be engaging and conversational. They should be able to share meaningful insights, resources, and benefits about the brand or service being discussed. They should be socially media savvy and understand how the channel works and the best ways to reach out and to get back to consumers having issues. Number three, set a timeline for resolution. It's one thing to reach out to a disgruntled customer and tell them that you are there to help them, and it's a very different thing to make sure that what you promise happens. While many consumers will be plenty happy just to get a response, there is most likely still a conflict that they would like to have resolved. This means that you need to confirm what the root resolutions are with the consumer to make sure that you both understand them the same way. Then you can determine internally how long it would take for the problem to be solved and share that information with the consumer. Propose resolution timelines like, "We expect this issue to be resolved within the next 2 hours, and we will contact you to confirm. Does this work for you?" Also, find out which method of confirmation will work best for them. Do they want you to send an email, follow up with a phone call, or text them? Make it easy for the consumer to be empowered and feel that you're taking their needs seriously. Be flexible and be accommodating. Number four, speak with a human voice. Your humanity puts you in a pretty good position to understand the needs of a consumer who is unhappy. Be approaching. Approach a conversation with something that sounds like a script written by a group of corporate lawyers isn't going to cut it. Effective customer service is about listening hard to problems and needs so you can find the best way to resolve them. If you sound like a marketer with a nice, safe corporate speak buffer, you won't be trusted because you don't sound at all objective. Instead, when you write or speak in a human voice, you come across as more transparent, more real. You don't have to hide your humanity or the fact you may have flaws as well. It's about being able to talk to real people about real concerns in their language. In a lot of ways, we strive to sound like rational cheerleaders. We want to be brand positive without sounding forced or phony. Successful customer service representatives use stories and anecdotes of their own experiences to share understanding whenever possible. For a number of brands, success in a social media customer support is based on strong foundations already. Brands like JetBlue, Amazon, and ThinkGeek all do an exceptional job of keeping an ongoing conversation going with their prospects and customers through their social media channels. These conversations are positive and at times amusing and take on a persona that is very human. This means that the language we choose to use to communicate with others should be more relaxed and share a lot of empathy and understanding. Saying something like, "We apologize for the delay receiving your merchandise," reads like stereo instructions and sounds cold and distant. Instead, answering with something like, "I'm so sorry for the hassle you're going through. It must be so frustrating. We're looking into this and we'll update our progress as soon as we can." While the core of the message doesn't really change, the emotions shared are significantly different. Number 5, be resourceful and educate consumers about benefits of your brand whenever possible. Once again, it can feel a bit like walking a tight wire, but part of the resolution of any conflict should include reiterating the benefits of doing business with your brand or company. It doesn't have to be a huge pitch and can serve more as an informational share with statements such as, "Were you aware that if you choose or use our credit card to rent a car and something happens that you are automatically covered?" Or, "Because you've had a hard time getting this resolved, I'd like to offer you a little extra to make up for the time." Or, "Can I send you a coupon for 30% off your next purchase?" The ultimate goal of a social media exchange is resolution. You want people to walk away feeling that they were listened to and that they were respected. You want them to say good things about your brand or company, whether it's through your social media channels, their social media channels, or doing conversations with their family around the dinner table. One of the biggest victories for most social media teams is approaching a consumer who is angry and loaded for bear and converting him or her to become a champion of their brand. It's not uncommon and starts with simply being able and willing to listen hard and then find ways to fix the conflict. Not every case will be a slam dunk, but if you engage consumers in their channels using their language, you'll be surprised at how quickly you can move people from angry and disgruntled to happy and willing to sing your praises. Speaking of making people happy and smart, if you would like access to free training modules, digital marketing strategy ebooks, podcasts, and other free goodies, simply click here at www.spidergram.com to join my mailing list, and I will send you a gift right away. That comes from contributing writer Spider Graham. In more local news, Raleigh outpaces Charlotte and cities with fastest growing private sector salaries. In 2015, private sector salaries nationwide increased an average of 2.6%, according to Headlight Data, which used recently released figures from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. Among large metros, those with 1 million or more residents, the highest rate of growth for private sector salaries was in Columbus, Ohio. Raleigh posted 5.7% salary growth last year and came in at number 6. Charlotte trailed at the City Oaks, which saw private sector salaries rise by 4.7% and ranked number 10. Here are the top 10 large metros for private sector salary growth and their one-year average salary growth. Columbus, Ohio, 8.9%. Virginia Beach, Virginia, 7.7%. Portland, Oregon, 6.5%. Jackson, Florida, 6.4%. Tampa, Florida, 6.1%, Raleigh, 5.7%, Grand Rapids, Michigan, 5.4%, Orlando, Florida, 5%, Birmingham, Alabama, 49%, Charlotte, 4.7%. 7 large metros say salaries decline. Louisville, Kentucky, a negative 2%, St. Louis, 1.8%, Oklahoma City, -1.7%, ranked lowest for growth, followed by Washington, D.C., -1.6%, Dallas, -1.1%, and Cleveland, Ohio, -0.8%. Raleigh's average private sector average salary was $52,936, while Charlotte's average salary was $53,768. Growth is measured by the percentage change in average annual salary between December 2014 and December 2015. Headlight data ranks salary growth for the 53 largest metros in the U.S. This comes from managing editor of the Orlando Business Journal, Susan Lundine. Three digital communication trends that are shrinking distances. I've been working in international business for 25 years, including a stint in Eastern Europe right after the Berlin Wall came down. I remember having to set a weekly time to reach my family by phone, and I'm sure I was one of the last people to write small mail letters on the tissue paper once provided by the USPS for overseas airmail. It's incredible how digital trends have evolved to minimize distance in just a couple of decades. Executives today enjoy a bevy of slick tools that make conducting business easier and bridge communication and culture gaps. Here are three major buckets these instruments fall into and how they can improve international business ventures. Number one, communication beyond borders. FaceTime, Skype, and other enterprise video conferencing tools instantly traverse global distances and make your counterparts feel like they're in the same room. Additionally, the digitization of telephony and voice over internet protocol, or VoIP, has rapidly reduced the cost of communication. I personally spend about 5 hours a day on international phone calls, so I've been a net beneficiary of these innovations. Social media platforms also funnel into this bucket. They've managed to shrink the world to our computers, phone screens, and wearable technology. Looking at my LinkedIn connections, I can see that the majority are from outside of the United States. In a world without LinkedIn, it's possible that I never would have met these connections. Instantaneous translation. The introduction and improvement of translation software, think Google Translate and similar products by Microsoft and SDL, are setting the stage to eliminate language barriers altogether. When perfected and incorporated into smartphones, this technology will allow two people to speak their native languages to each other and understand every translated word. Already, I've heard stories of friends using such apps to communicate with Uber drivers and hospitality staff in other counties and countries. Streamline business logistics is number three. Not only have digital advancements bolstered global communication, but they've also improved the logistics of how we do business. It's possible to ship overseas via an app or even outsource a hamburger order. A technology transfer can happen in a matter of minutes, whether it's a presentation deck or the rough cut of a video. The more global corporations take their brands to an ever-increasing number of countries, the more the world shrinks. To sustain this rapid globalization, it's vital that digital technology keeps pace. At the current rate, in 25 years, email may seem just like an antiquated as my old tissue paper letters. This came from contributing writer Jason Pop. Triangle Eateries land on the list of NC's tiny restaurants that are actually amazing. Three Triangle restaurants are highlighted in travel blog Only in North Carolina's feature, 10 extremely tiny restaurants in North Carolina that are actually amazing. Among the hole-in-the-wall venues on the short list are Dame's Chicken and Waffles in Durham, Mecca Restaurant in downtown Raleigh, and Johnson's Drive-In in Siler City. The interior of Dame's is simple and to the point, with a small window in the back that gives you a nice view of the kitchen. No need for fanciness when the food is this amazing, writes the blog. And of the historic Mecca, this dive restaurant is a must experience with downtown Southern comfort food served in a cozy, no-frills environment. Again, the three places to try are Dame's Chicken and Waffles in Durham, Mecca Restaurant in downtown Raleigh, and Johnson's Drive in Siler City. Those are the ones that are among the areas that are close together. Aerospace components maker to Double Durham operations. Blue Force Technologies, a Durham-based design and build firm of specialized component parts for aerospace and commercial products, will be more than doubling the size of its production office in Keystone Business Park. Blue Force has renewed its lease and doubled the size of its manufacturing space at Keystone, taking now 32,000 square feet, according to new releases from building owner Liberty Property Trust. Blue Force Technologies, founded in 2011 by local entrepreneur Scott Bledsoe, works with the U.S. military and its aerospace and defense contractors to produce molds and component parts used in aircraft and military vehicles. Our growth trajectory in both our defense and new space commercial space launch portfolios have exceeded our five-year plan, causing us to be space constrained, Bledsoe stated in the announcement. Having Liberty is a landlord as a landlord with this simple selection of high quality RTP properties is a big plus, especially to an agile manufacturer like us. A company representative was not immediately available to provide information about the current headcount or its expansion will trigger a boost in hiring. Retail estate broker Brian Bleef represented Liberty in the transaction. This came from Amanda Hole from the Triangle Business Journal. And one quick story. Ivanka Trump branded scarves recalled due to burn risk. Maybe it's time to make American scarves great again. GBG Accessories Group of New York City has recalled two styles of Ivanka Trump branded scarves because they pose a burn risk. The rayon scarves were made in China and don't meet federal flammability standards for clothing textiles, according to the Consumer Product Safety Commission. The scarves were sold in retail outlets ranging from Lord & Taylor to Marshalls from October 2014 through January 2016. Ivanka Trump is the daughter of Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump. When he says China is killing us, I don't think this is what he means. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Shadate Hargett-Hill, reading for Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. So long until next time. Now, if you would like to be a sponsor of Triangle Business Journal or any other program, please give us a call at 919-832-5138. Again, our number is 919-832-5138.